From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, April 29th, 2026. Maine lawmakers have failed to override the governor's veto of a statewide pause on data center development. As Peter McGuire reports, supporters of the measure say Maine is now left without protections from the controversial facilities.
Bill's sponsor, Democrat Melanie Sachs, says sustaining Governor Janet Mills' veto ignores residents' concerns about rising electric bills and environmental problems linked to large-scale data centers.
And I say to every member of this body that our failure to govern today as a body will be laid at our feet by our constituents, regardless of political affiliation.
The bill would have stopped data center construction for 18 months while the state developed regulations. Mills vetoed the measure because it would have blocked a project at the former paper mill in Jay. Centers used to power artificial intelligence software are facing pushback across the U.S. Most Republicans voted to sustain Mills' veto, while Democrats voted to override. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
Meantime, Mills has ordered the creation of a state commission to assess ways to protect electric customers, the power grid, and the environment from large-scale data center development. The 15 members will present their recommendations on data centers to the legislature early next year. And a bill to seal the criminal records of many misdemeanor offenders is also dead after lawmakers failed to override a veto from Governor Janet Mills. The bill would have automatically sealed the records of lower-level offenders who have not committed another crime in 5 years. Senator Rachel Talbot Ross, a Democrat from Portland, estimated that the measure could help more than 100,000 Maine residents secure jobs and housing.
By recognizing that once someone has paid their debt to society, they deserve a second chance, an opportunity to build a life for themselves and their families.
But Mills said the bill would be overly burdensome to implement and contained a drafting error that could allow domestic violence offenders to have their records sealed. Talbot Ross said that error would be fixed before the bill takes effect in 2 years. But the attempt to override the governor's veto fell one vote short in the Senate. The state's largest union, the Maine Education Association, is endorsing three Democratic gubernatorial candidates in the upcoming ranked choice primary. Members ranked Shenna Bellows as their first choice, Troy Jackson second, and Dr. Nirav Shah third. MEA President Jesse Hargrove says all Republican and Democratic candidates were invited to participate in the screening process, and one Republican began the process but later withdrew. The MEA says their support only applies to the primary election, and they will conduct another endorsement process in July. For disclosure, most of Maine Public's news staff is represented by the MEA. The city of Portland has approved about $10 million for expanded Jetport parking. Jetport officials have been searching for years for a way to add more parking at the airport. But last fall, the city council rejected a plan to expand surface lots in response to pushback from environmental advocacy groups and Jetport neighbors. Now the Jetport will pave over a gravel lot and bring another existing surface parking lot up to current standards for a total of about 530 spaces. The lots are smaller than what was previously proposed. The Jetport will also begin the design of a new, larger parking garage, which airport officials say is needed in the next 5 years. If you can prove you have a Canadian ancestor, even several generations back, you might now technically be a Canadian citizen. That's thanks to a new law out of Ottawa, removing the one-generation limit on citizenship based on descent. In Maine, where many families have roots north of the border, it set off a scramble among those seeking a potential exit strategy from the U.S. Ari Snyder reports.
Not in any particular order at the moment.
At the public library in the town of Washington, Sam is sifting through reams of documents tracing his lineage.
This is my great-grandfather's death certificate here. He died in Springfield, Massachusetts in the 1960s. So that's my actual Canadian ancestor right there.
Sam is a mariner and a farmer. He's also trans and asked that we use only his first name to protect his safety. He says he and his husband began having conversations a few years ago about possibly needing to leave the U.S. in response to rising anti-LGBTQ rhetoric and legislation.
But in the last probably 6 months to a year particularly, the conversations have been feeling a bit less abstract.
Sam says his family immigrated to the U.S. from Newfoundland around 1890, but he says the process of seeking Canadian citizenship had seemed daunting until the new eligibility rules.
It just felt like a golden ticket.
The change was sparked by a 2023 court ruling that Canada's one-generation limit on citizenship by ancestry was unconstitutional. In December, a new law extended citizenship to those born abroad who can show they have a Canadian parent, grandparent, or other parental link.
I found my grandfather's birth certificate on the Nova Scotia Archives site, so that kind of made it super easy for me.
Pam Barry Santos of Freeport says she and her teenage son got citizenship last year under an interim rule before the final law went into effect. Barry Santos recently took her son to visit a few colleges in Canada, and she's considering retiring there, but for now her long-term plans are still up in the air.
So it's not like I got it and I'm like, I'm across the border like some people are. It's definitely on my radar, though.
Through the end of January, a spokesperson for Canada's immigration agency says that nearly 1,500 people have been confirmed as, quote, citizens by descent under the new act. The agency does not have an estimate of how many people are newly eligible, but an immigration lawyer in Vancouver says by some estimates it's in the millions, with a particularly high concentration in New England.
There was a study done that 20-30% of New Englanders are descendants of French Canadians.
Amandeep Hayer says Canada has been restricting other pathways to citizenship, leading some immigrants and international students to question the fairness of who gets permanent status and who doesn't.
There are people here who have paid taxes in Canada, who lived in Canada. Why are they being excluded from any pathway to permanent residence?
One immediate consequence of the new law is a genealogical gold rush of people digging through census files, provincial archives, and baptismal records to prove their Canadian ancestry. Doug Cochran, a genealogist in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, says he used to get about 10 family history research requests a month. Now,
I'm getting at least 5 to 6 per day.
Cochran says he's booked out 4 to 6 weeks, with the most urgent calls coming from LGBTQ Americans. He says he puts those requests at the top of the list.
Because people have a right to be who they are. And if they can't do it in their home country, well, come to Canada. We'll welcome you.
Sam, the Midcoast resident who's grappling with the question of his own long-term safety and belonging in the U.S. as a trans person, says the prospect of uprooting his life has brought up a range of emotions.
It's great if you want to leave home to seek opportunity elsewhere. I mean, that's how a lot of us got here in the first place, or at least our ancestors did. But it's another thing to leave because it's no longer the home that you thought you had.
For now, he's focused on the task at hand, collecting the final documents he needs to prove his Canadian citizenship. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
In a neighborhood not far from downtown Portland, there's a teenager who lives with two cats and a Great Dane. She likes jazz, taking naps, and pecking at kitchen scraps. Her name is Gertie, and she's a chicken. At age 15, the Guinness Book of World Records recently declared her the world's oldest chicken. Patty White has the story.
You won't find Gertie in a backyard coop these days. She now lives, befitting of her age and status, in a converted dog crate in Frank Turek's living room.
She makes these little peeping sounds.
Gertie! Gertie!
Gertie has striking pumpkin-colored feathers outlined in black. She's a bantam, about half the size of a regular hen. She began her life as a backyard bird in Turek's first flock, and though she was a different breed than the other chickens, Turek says it didn't take long for Gertie to stand out in other ways.
I think just kind of her outgoing nature, the way that she was like the alpha chicken, she had more personality.
Gertie isn't intimidated by humans, he says. She's lived within 4 different flocks and even learned to crow like a rooster to keep her spot at the top of the pecking order. But as she aged, Gertie started to lose her sight. The other hen sensed she was vulnerable and attacked her a couple of times, Turek says. Then on Christmas Day in 2024,
I heard this ruckus out in the coop and I went back and her head was all bloody. It was really horrifying. They nearly killed her.
After that, Turek decided to keep her in the house.
It's actually more convenient to have her inside because she was blind, so I was having every night they get up on the perch and she couldn't, so every night I would have to go out and put her up on the perch.
Gertie's path to fame started last fall after Turek posted her photo to an online chicken enthusiast group. Someone commented that at 15, her age surpassed the world's oldest chicken at the time. Turek set out to prove it. Armed with his original email when he bought her and lots of time-stamped photos and videos, he convinced the Guinness Book of World Records, which earlier this month declared Gertie the world's oldest chicken.
It just feels kind of satisfying to know that, because she's such a sweet, sweet animal, and to know that she has that accolade.
The average lifespan for backyard chickens is typically 3 or 4 years. At 15, Gertie still has plenty of interest in life. She just learned to hop up onto a perch again, and she perks up when she hears jazz music. When Turek plays sax great Charlie Parker, Gertie tilts her head and tucks one of her legs up into her feathers.
One leg stand.
I wonder what that means.
I'm not sure. Turn up the volume.
Turek will turn up the volume this July when Gertie turns 16. He plans to throw her a party. He'll put some lights on her cage, invite a few friends over, and play some jazz. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, cookbook author and chicken keeper Lisa Steele. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.